Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today on Sticks In, it's Positive Friday. We've got a rundown on what's on tap for the weekend ahead in the lacrosse world, a look at some of the results from during the week. We have some big news in the PLL world with Bill Tierney being named the head coach and GM of the Water Dogs. The midseason All-Americans are probably here as you're listening to this. I will go through my ballot and some of the guys I voted for and why things have changed since the preseason. And of course, we will go through the weekend slate, look at all the games on tap, and make some picks. If you're enjoying the podcast, please do leave a like, subscribe, download, all that good stuff that you can do on your platform of choice. Let's do it. Welcome back to Sticks In, everyone. I'm glad you're here. My name is Dan Arestia. It has been a week. There is a lot to get to. Before we start getting into the lacrosse stuff, though, I did want to make a little podcast announcement. Sticks In is now on the Believe Studio. Believe hosts dozens, hundreds of podcasts from some of the biggest people in the sports world, some of the biggest sports in the world. There's football, basketball, whatever content you can imagine. And I am very happy to say that I have signed to be a lacrosse podcast on the Believe Network. So you will start hearing maybe a little bit of Believe stuff as you listen to the pod. The content won't change. It'll still be me deciding what we talk about and how we talk about it. But positive things are happening with the podcast, and that's great to know. So I'm happy that you all are listening. It's because people listen, because people care about this, that somebody else has become interested in hosting the pod. So very thrilled about that. And let's get right back, I guess, into the lacrosse stuff. You know, I've spent too much time on the announcement here, but the first thing is the big news, obviously, of the day here on Thursday, the PLL news that I believe Chris Rosie and IL reported at first, and then a league announcement followed. But Bill Tierney is going to be the new head coach and the GM of the Philadelphia Water Dogs. If you're a lacrosse fan, odds are you already are familiar with Coach Tierney. You kind of know the gravitas and the resume and all that. The accolades are off the chart. If you aren't new or you just need a refresher, Coach Tierney has won 7 Division I men's national championships, 6 with Princeton during a decade of downright dominance through the 90s and then one in the early 2000s, and then he won a championship with Denver in 2015. His move to Denver, outside of just the winning on his resume, but his move to Denver and then the title that he won there is kind of the thing that people point to as spearheading and signaling this growth west for the sport of lacrosse. Bill Tierney's move to Denver was a monumental moment for the college game. His title at Denver is the first time a team that wasn't in the Eastern time zone won a national championship. It was this move outside of our typical East Coast strongholds and, you know, the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast out to Denver where the sport was growing and planted a flag there. And Coach Tierney growing that program at Denver to eventually a national championship, followed by the Outlaws moving there and the MLL and being a pro, you know, juggernaut for years was kind of what built this sport out west, and Coach Tierney is very much one of the people who you would consider responsible for that. He also has a gold medal with Team USA. He won that in 1998. They beat Canada in OT in the gold medal game that year. He is already a member of the National Lacrosse Hall of Fame. He's pretty unassailable in terms of coaching credentials. He retired from college coaching after last season. He does have a few of his Denver alums on his roster with the Water Dogs and Jack Hanna and Ethan Walker. He's the greatest and most successful coach of all time. He's in the top two or three. He's a Mount Rushmore guy. The candidate pool for this job reportedly included guys like Spencer Ford, Brody Merrill, Stephen Brooks, Joe Spallina, Tony Resch. I believe Anthony Kelly's name was in there, and then obviously Coach Tierney. So he beats out plenty of very worthy names for this job. So that's kind of the resume. Obviously impeccable. I go through all that to make it clear that as I talk about the hire, I am in no way going to impugn this man's ability to coach and his ability to win. But with all those qualifiers up front, you might be able to guess where I'm going, but I think I'm going to be in the minority opinion here and saying that I'm maybe not a huge fan of the hire. I get why you make it. I guess look out now. Maybe I'm going to say some things that aren't complimentary. So I guess I'm just attempting to dunk on people, but whatever. I'm not loving it. Coach Copeland left the job. There was some legitimate feedback when that happened along the lines of what's with some of the coaching turnover? How come the coaches are coming and going so as often as they are, you know? Successful coaches. You know, you had Dom Starja after a year kind of go and a new coach come in there, but, you know, Ben Rubior comes in for the Atlas job after John Paul, you know, was the coach there. Rubior is very successful, turns the team around, builds it into a contender, and then leaves. Coach Copeland takes the job with the Water Dogs in their expansion year, takes them from expansion club of non-existence to a championship caliber team. You know, they've been to the last three championship games, you know, a championship series and two regular season championships. And then he leaves. So fans are saying, why are these guys not sticking around? What's going on? And I think, you know, you kind of look at the way Atlas fans reacted maybe to the hire for this past season, and it seems like maybe they aren't necessarily loving where that's at. I think this felt like a hire that you absolutely wanted to get right, that you wanted to hit a home run with. And in my eyes, a home run hire for this is somebody who's you know, something of a player's coach, has had success. But I would also probably, if it was me, I would have been looking a little bit on the younger side. Maybe time to get away from guys who were the retiree crowd and try and see if you can hire somebody away from a college coaching job, that kind of thing. Again, like I'm going to keep qualifying it because Coach Tierney is probably the best to ever do it. But he retired a year ago. He's 71 years old. I know Paul Vrabel said it's a multi-year deal, but I just wonder how long we're really expecting Coach T to do the job. Is it a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then we're doing this again? Because, you know, giving up your summer weekends, holding a pro locker room together, the travel, all that stuff, it's very difficult. And it's very different from coaching any other level or type of lacrosse. It's not like college. You know, it's also just not for everybody. The world's just a different place. You know, the MLL once upon a time was big on hiring the recently retired college coaches. And this kind of, you know, are we doing that again? Coach Tierney's, you know, also the style of team that he has coached in the past and the way he has kind of built his teams historically has not always been about fast paced or high paced play. His teams at Princeton changed the game because they played with an offense that was very deliberate, that, you know, worked for the best opportunity with a very talented, one of the best attacks to ever play the game through that stretch with Jesse Hubbard and John Hess and Chris Massey. But they were very much controlling the game. And this was always backboned by a team defense that nobody could ever solve. Coach Tierney's defenses were, it was like every week it was something new and different, and they were always just built to stop you and to slow the game down. He supported a shot clock addition in college, but he also said, I remember this, I remember when the shot clock was coming, that he was one of the people who felt like it would be okay to just be better at officiating the timer on rule that we had at the time. That was, you know, if we could ref that consistently, then that would be okay too. I think he, you know, like many other people at the time realized and came around to saying, you know, there is no way to do that consistently. So we'll just go with the shot clock and supported the shot clock addition. But, you know, you kind of look at the PLL version of the shot clock. It's 32 seconds after a face-off, no poles facing off. It's a game in the PLL that's getting closer to sixes, frankly, all the time. And that's fast as hell. And there's no slowing that down. So a coach whose style is control, 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 pace needs to be slowed and we control the ball and, you know, we built on team defense. Does that style compute with just like the PLL rulebook? I don't know. There's like challenges there. Again, I'll keep qualifying it. He is one of the best coaches ever and he will find a way, I'm sure, to make it work. But this is just my initial reaction to the hire. Of course, I would consider him the biggest splash of a name from that candidate pool. He's going to be the guy who moves the needle the most. Even with those other names are all recognizable, you know, stars in the lacrosse world, up-and-comers in the coaching world. Coach Tierney is obviously in a category by himself. He is, in my estimation, from that group, he's the best opportunity at hiring a name that a casual fan or somebody who's newer to the sport or tangentially follows lacrosse maybe is going to recognize. He's the best for that. So it's maximum splash to be made with a hire, kind of look like what the maybe was part of the priorities here. And again, one of the best coaches ever, but I think you know, could you make a similar splash if you make Coach Tierney a leadership level person within the league and keep him part of the broadcast on a regular basis? Maybe that accomplishes something similar. I don't know. It's just, I was thinking about other ways that Coach Tierney could be more visible with the league, but coaching pros is also very different than coaching college. As I kind of said, being the taskmaster type, the hard ass type, the conditioning all the time, you know, the running the mile test and all that stuff. It's part of the college game. I don't know if it's part of the pro landscape. I don't know if players today are receptive to that kind of coaching anymore. Will a pro locker room be receptive to that kind of coaching? Has a pro locker room ever been like that? Particularly a pro locker room where you're going to have guys who have other jobs during the week or have other opportunities. Is a room full of guys who have won a championship and been in, like I said, those three title games in 2 years, are they going to be receptive to the taskmaster style? You know, and if you want to give me the kids these days routine and oh, in my day, the coach would run us and we had no water break stuff, like, save it. It's baloney. The world changes. Times change. You can't act like it's 1994. It's 2024. At the pro level, if you do, in today's world of player empowerment, if you try and be the taskmaster type, especially in the big four leagues, you're probably just going to get run out of a job. The list of coaches who can successfully do that is not very long. Players don't always respond, and they won't always perform, and that'll be that. So, you know, again, like, stylistically, you know, does Coach T change kind of the way he is and the way he runs his programs? Does he try and run it like he ran college programs, or is it going to be different? Is there going to be some kind of adaptation to pro culture there? You know, as I looked at the hire, I will tell you, I thought Stephen Brooks should have gotten the job. I thought, you know, is Stephen Brooks equipped to handle PLL pros based on his experience with the league so far? Absolutely. Has he shown a pro lacrosse level coaching acumen as an assistant, as an acting head coach? Absolutely. Is he anywhere near the splash hire that Bill Tierney is? Absolutely not. Nobody is, right? Nobody is. So, you know, with these kind of big moves, I ask myself, does this make me more interested in the league or less? And all in all, I honestly don't know. Sometimes I feel like it makes me a little bit less interested. I don't want to be doom and gloom about it. It has nothing to do with the person. Sometimes it's just how these things are going lately. I'm sure I'm going to keep watching games. I'll do my usual stories and coverage and all that. But, you know, you think about some of the time spent, and I don't ever want to feel like I'm covering pro wrestling, basically. But, you know, sometimes it starts to feel like that. So I continue to love the players on the field, the guys doing what they do, playing the sport that I love at a level that's absolutely incredible. That's why I go. That's why I watch. That's the whole reason. I care about what they're doing, and because some of them have said they care about what I do. It's the reason I keep doing it. But, you know, it's hard to stay super interested if things are always just going to be about making the splash, the big name, in service of the league being a star. The league being a star. I didn't see a ton of player reaction today. You know, there was the post from Michael Sowers Insta story where he posted like the Wire meme or whatever, but and maybe I missed it. But I don't think I heard from Zach Currier today, so publicly anywhere. I don't think I heard from Kieran McArdle publicly anywhere. You know, I feel like maybe that should have been out there. There should have been more of that. I know the league was very excited and really much really wanted the news to break on ESPN. They had to hit on ESPN during SportsCenter or whatever it was. In the middle of the day, and it was like, well, we're not just on the top 10. Look, we're breaking coaching news. And I know that they were, or, you know, I had heard a little bit from people that the league wasn't thrilled that the news was out first on social media and then on ESPN, as opposed to the other way around. I think they wanted everything to break on ESPN and get the big hit, get the big splash, right? Get all that stuff. I know there were some Water Dogs players and everything who found out about the hire basically via social, via the post going from IL. So I'm not here to judge whether that's the right way to do it or wrong way to do it, but you know, a lot of this felt like, look, we're on ESPN, we made the big splash, we made the big move, we're getting the big hit. You know, so you hear from obviously from you know the personalities and everything, but I feel like I really didn't hear from a ton of players today. I don't know how they feel about it. I'd love to know how some of these guys feel about the hire. I'm sure I could reach out and ask some of them off the record and get a feel for it and all that. But I'm always in service of make the players the stars and put them out there, put their personalities out there. I want to hear from these guys. And I don't feel like we really heard from too many of them today. I sound like I'm such a doomer here, but I'm really not trying to be that way. I'm sure my opinion on this is very much in the minority. I don't know. But that was my honest reaction to it in real time. I'm sure come September, I will be loud wrong. The Water Dogs will win. Everyone loves each other. It all works out. It's probably what happens. But that's still just the way I reacted to it in real time, basically. Moving on from the PLL, I guess. In the college world, we have the midseason All-Americans. This pod is going to go up on Friday morning. I don't know if they're going to be posted or not by then, but the ballots and everything were submitted, I believe, basically by Wednesday night was when I had mine in. So midseason All-Americans, I'll take you through kind of who I voted for. And if you listen to this before it comes out, then you have a little sneak peek at how I voted. Afterwards, you can kind of see where I'm wildly different from people. But before we get to the ballot, we should be clear about something. The only All-American list that matters less than the preseason team is the midseason team. That's a pretty light level of meaning and importance. So I personally try and take the midseason ballot to highlight the guys who maybe are a little bit under the radar or are having excellent seasons that people aren't paying enough attention to. They are worthy of recognition. Are they actually probably the best players in the country? Some maybe yes, but some, you know, maybe not. But they've earned this recognition right now. So that's kind of where I see the reasoning for the midseason ballot. So I've got kind of the mix of the guy who's, you know, the best player in the country with a guy who is probably not going to be a first, second, whatever kind of teamer at the end of the year, but he deserved it right now. So it all comes out in the wash. You know, the real All-American list is the one that arrives at the end of the year. Of course, we will all get that list 100% right. It will be unassailable. But that said, because it's a list and because there's a tone, an undertone of rankings to it, I'm sure people will get worked up and Team Whatabout will be out in force saying, I forgot this guy or he forgot that guy or you're sleeping on this person, whatever. I think that's part of the fun for this. So as always, I invite you to let me know who I've wildly overrated and underrated. As always, you know where to find me and let me know this stuff, but we won't spend a ton of time on each team here or each guy because it'll take forever. But what I want to do is call out a few of the names across the first, second, and third team that have earned it or might be maybe raising your eyebrows a little bit as I voted for them. So without further ado, I guess, here's how I voted. On the first team, at attack. Okay, no really shockers here so far. Brennan O'Neill, Connor Schellenberger, and Matt Brandau. I don't think Schellenberger or Brennan, of course, are particularly controversial. But the third spot is interesting to me. I made Matt Brandau a first-team All-American because right now he is the nation's leader in points per game. He is the nation's leader in assists per game. And I think you have to go on per game basis right now. You got guys who have played 10 games, you got guys who have played six or whatever. But Brandao is on fire on offense against a really good schedule. And he's doing it with no Leo Johnson, with no Chris Lyons, with no Brad Sharp. It's the guys stepping up on the field with him, and Brando is elevating their game. It's really his level of play where every team knows some of these guys are backups. We need to stop 41, and they can't stop 41. I think his production in the face of the injuries that Yale is dealing with, the way that their offense has not slowed down even for a second, I think Brando deserves a ton of credit for that. And I think that elevation that he has brought to that team on the offensive end is a credit to him, and it warrants him being a first-teamer. My first-team midfield, I have Graham Bundy, Jake Stevens, and Evan Plunkett. Bundy and Stevens, again, like attacker, there's two who shouldn't be surprising maybe, but I can't imagine those guys not being first-teamers. They're so critically important on very good teams. I think Plunkett has been one of the most dynamic dodgers and creators in the country. I have yet to see somebody who can successfully guard him from wire to wire in a game. He's always going to be dangerous off the dodge. I kind of, you know, given Army's success in the first half and their time spent at number one, the way they've played, you know, the how good they've been, that probably elevates my thinking for some of these guys. So Plunkett, I have here at first team. Again, I think he's been for my money, probably their best midfielder. On defense at first team, I have Ajax Zapatello, Kenny Brower, and AJ Pilot. Again, maybe Army is kind of biasing me here a little bit, but I think Pilot can lock up anybody in the country, just like the other two guys on this first team. I think he is the critical piece of the Army defense, a defense that is very good, that's always well-coached and organized, and he is the organizer of it. So I think AJ Pilot has earned first team midseason. Long stick midfield, Jake Pacino, I don't think anybody can argue with it. He just refuses to leave the field during games. He's going to go in the first round of the PLL draft in about 6 weeks or whatever it is from now. And he's appointment. Like, you got to turn on Albany games just to see him. He's always on the field. He's getting praise from around the league from guys like Starja and guys like Lars Tiffany, who are calling him the best player in the country. They're likening him to Lyle Thompson with a pole, having that level of impact on a game. So I think he has to be your first team LSM. Short stick D middies, we vote for two. I voted for Bo Peterson and Ben Ramsey. They were both my preseason All-Americans. I think they both still belong there. I think they're both that good. There's no real change for me there. First team faceoff, I gave it to Will Colletti. Army, again, maybe I'm over-rewarding Army here, but look, Colletti's facing off at over 65% on the season. The worst day he's had this year was beating Mason Conn and Syracuse. Pretty, you know, not handily, like a little above 50-50. He's beaten everybody else pretty handily. Torched Cole Broms and Rutgers. He's been something that Army has been missing for a while, what they've had with Will Colletti these last 2 years. So I think Colletti has earned the first team faceoff spot. And my first team goalie is Emmett Carroll at Penn. That's right. Not Liam Enemann. Emmett Carroll. Second in the country in save percentage, third in saves made, averaging over 14 saves per game. Basically, only Quinnipiac's Mason Oak has been better, and Carroll has played a much tougher schedule. Penn is not running up scores on people. They need Emmett Carroll to be excellent every time out, and he has been. I think for me, he's been the best goalie in the country for the first half of the year. On the second teamers, at attack, I have Pat Cavanaugh, I have Joey Spallina, and I have CJ Kirst. Probably who you guessed would be here based on who I gave you for the first team. I think Joey's playing well enough to belong here. Like, the Joey haters are going to be loud. They're going to be constant. It's what happens when you have the hype and everything that Joey has. But ultimately, look, the kid's leading the country in points, man. He's played fewer games than guys like Brennan, and he's still leading the country in points. And everyone's going to be like, he runs it up on the you know, the mediocre teams, and then he doesn't do as much against the good teams or whatever. But look, you produce against who you're playing against, and he's producing against good teams. We'll see how he does against Notre Dame this weekend. Obviously, that's a game where they're going to, you know, look to Joey to produce, but it's another one where if it goes like the Duke game and the rest of the offense is cooking, I think it's a credit to Joey Spolina that he can say, I don't need to have the ball that much in this game. I don't need to do much because I'm looking around and this defense is not stopping our midfield. So I'll just facilitate our midfield. I do think still, though, I think stopping Hughes, even with all those weapons, I still believe it starts with defending 22, with defending Joey. So second team attack, Kavanaugh, Spolina, and CJ Kirst. Second team midfield, I have Dobson here, Eric Dobson, Sam English, and Griffin Schutz. I puzzled for a long time about where to put Dobson because I feel like he's still an impactful player, but his numbers haven't been great. His shooting numbers are definitely down. But, you know, the emergence of guys like Jordan Faison have changed kind of his role on the team. So I think just on, like, you know, the impact he can have and the way, like, you still have to scheme for him. He still changes the way defenses have to play. But, if you wanted to tell me I have him too high, I wouldn't fight you. Sam English has been such a good Dodger for Hughes. I think he was, you know, honorable mention in the preseason list. And I think that was basically because he hasn't played in forever. He had the injury that caused him to miss all of last season. So we hadn't seen him and it felt weird to rank him higher than that. But he's playing to where he, to this level, to the teamer level to me. I could watch him dodge and get to his right from a high wing all day. There's nobody better than him at it. And Schutz, I also felt like it is an easy inclusion here. He's been dominant for UVA in games out of the midfield for them. You know, when they need something from the midfield, it goes to him. At defense, second team, Cole Kastner, Scott Smith, and Jackson Bonnets. Kastner was first team good. I had him first team in the preseason, but I wanted to make room for Pilot, and it's the midseason, so it doesn't really matter. I think Jackson Bonnets has played extremely well for Navy. I think his leadership alongside guys who are developing like freshmen, like AJ Marsh there, has been critical for them. And I think the Navy defense has really shined in some games thanks to Bonnets kind of keeping it organized. You know, that unit with those two guys, I think Jackson Peters is having a great year at SSDM. But they've built kind of a really solid unit, and Bonnets remains the most important piece of it. My second team LSM is Roy Meyer. Roy is continuing to do Roy things all year, what you would expect, but he just happens to be, like Pacino's just going to be the guy there. The tough part is that you could probably consider Pacino a close defenseman. I think that's basically where he starts games, but he plays LSM, man. He's up and down like an LSM. That's his position. So I keep Pacino as an LSM, and Roy Meyer goes to the second team for me. My second team short stick D-middies are Grant Hawes from Penn State and Aiden McGuire from Duke. I think, Duke has looked maybe a little bit more vulnerable to me than I thought they would this year, but I love Aiden McGuire's game. He's caused a turnover for them in 8 games, at least one turnover in 8 games. He's great going defense to offense. He's one of the better athletes on that team, I think. He really shines. He really finds ways to stand out in games. And usually if you're an SSDM standing out a game, it's for a negative reason. It's because you keep getting dodged on and run by. Every time I find myself stopping to watch Aiden McGuire, it's for a reason like, oh, what a play that kid just made. Like he is really good. So I think he's kind of earned the recognition at this point in the year. I also think Hawes has played really well for PSU, but I think I had him here in the preseason. He was a second or third team guy in the preseason to me, and I think he's basically playing to what you would expect. Second team face-off, I have Machado Rodriguez from Yale, Mac. Maybe I'm just getting crazy at the face-off spot here, but look, Rodriguez, 6:45 facing off for Yale. He has become their lead guy. It used to be kind of Nick Ramsey's job, and then they kind of split, but Rodriguez is very much their guy now. He plays at a ridiculous speed, at just an insane tempo. He creates offense as well as any face-off athlete out there for me. Every time I look up, he's winning the ball forward off the break and running a fast break. He's winning the ball forward, and it's instant pressure. And the crazy thing with him is he's so fast and just he plays. I think Jerry Ragone says he plays like he's on fire. Even if Rodriguez doesn't win it forward, he's fast enough that he can still just win it to himself basically anywhere and then just run past everybody. And there's still like, it's still an unsettled situation and he can score. You have to respect him. So I think he's having a hell of a year and he's earned this level of recognition, like I said, for the midseason point. Second team goalie, I have Liam Edelman from Notre Dame. I am not that crazy, folks. Edelman is at worst the second best goalie in the country. Third teamers. My third team attack, I have Josh Zawada, TJ Malone, and Sam King. Zawada, I don't think should be a surprise, but his production has been exceptional. It's hard to argue with. Yeah, I think he's third in the country in points right now. It's hard to argue with that. For a while, he was Duke's leader in points. He was scoring more than Brennan was. He's been a great kind of facilitator and distributor of the ball for them. So Malone was a teamer for me in the preseason. My opinion has not changed. I love TJ Malone's game. I think he's going to shred the pros. Sam King at Harvard has had an incredibly good first half. That Harvard offense has been banged up all year so far, and they have needed to scrap their way back into games and find ways to win using, you know, by being really efficient on the man up, by, you know, taking care of the ball and by kind of creating offense where maybe there isn't a whole lot of offense to be created. Sam King is at the middle of that. Every time something positive is happening, he's part of it. And he's at the top of the scout for them. Everybody knows he's their best player. He was their best player coming into the season. So when you consider that, along with the fact that they're missing some of the guys who you thought would be playing big roles for them on offense, and he's still this productive, I think it's a really big credit to Sam King. He's been outstanding. My third team midfield, I have Jacob Morin, Shane Knobloch, and Alex Verdaro. Morin, another Army guy who's kind of climbed the list for me. But really, all these guys are teamers. They deserve to be there. I think Knobloch and Verdaro, I imagine, were teamers in the preseason. You know, Rutgers not having a great year, maybe, or not as good of a year as they might have thought. You know, it's way too early to kind of count them out here, but, you know, they don't have any kind of big signature win yet. But Knobloch has been very good. He's still one of the best dodging middies in the country. At the defensive end, I have Pat Morris in here. I had Pat Morris. He's been so good for BU. I have Woodward on third-team defense as well. My third-team LSM is Ben Ware at UVA. I don't think you can watch a UVA game and not be impressed with him. Off the ground, in transition, I think he can be as good as anybody on that defense. And that says a lot considering the guys they have out there. I think Ben Ware has been great for them at the LSM spot. He jumps off tape to me. At short stick D midfield on the third team, I have Chase Yeager and Patrick Hackler. Yeager is another guy who stands out in these UVA games to me. Calling Hackler a short stick D mid at this point, maybe it's cheating because he plays so much offense for Yale now due to injuries. He's on the field a ton for them. But if you think of this spot as kind of a two-way guy or a D guy who stays on, he very much fits the bill. He does a lot for them. It's been interesting because his play on offense has created more opportunities for short stick D middies at Yale, and Christian Johnson has played well for them. He's a guy I considered to try and find a spot for here because he's been really good. He's been really coming on lately. But he's kind of had that opportunity to play more minutes with Hackler playing more offense, and I think he's handled it really well. I have Khan from Syracuse as my 13 faceoff guy. Maybe I went too crazy at the faceoff. I don't know. I think he's been very good against some very difficult competition, and he's been a major part of Q's success. And my third team goalie, again with the Q's here, is Will Mark. Mark could be higher, for sure, but it's just a big time year for goalies right now, I think. I think it's hard to say, you know, Carroll and Edelman haven't been two of the best. If you want to throw Mason Oak in there too. I think Will Mark's Duke tape is going to be studied as fine art because he played so well. But third team for Will Mark for me. Honorable mention, you can kind of just kind of start dropping names in, but some guys I definitely wanted to get in there are attackmen. Like, I wanted to make sure I got Jacob Angelus in there. I think he's been underappreciated for Hopkins as kind of the QB. They have so many weapons, so many guys creating and scoring points for them, that it's hard to kind of isolate the guy on Hopkins that you really want to name as the star. But I think Angelus is the one who makes it all go. I think if Angelus was to be out of the lineup for Hopkins, you would see it and feel it immediately. I think he's kind of really run with that alpha distributor role there. A couple other guys I wanted to make sure I named, but Billy Dwan at Q's has been excellent. I think he's been great all year. I think the Duke game And the gravitas of that game, his matchup being Brennan, and the stuff he put on tape was the game where everybody kind of realized, casual fan, hardcore fan, whatever, but everybody realized, okay, he's for real. So I think he's been great this year. I think Levi Virch at St. Joe's has been great. Ty Banks at Georgetown has been really good. Freshman defensemen just across the country have been so good. Kilrain at Hopkins is great. Light at Notre Dame is great. There are some really, really good freshman defenders out there. And I think J.C. Higginbottom at Bellarmine in net deserves some love. He's been really, really good. You know, it's easy to kind of stick to the usual mainstays at the Blue Bud programs, but, you know, sometimes you find the goalies at these programs who see a ton of shots and just keep saving them, and that's Higginbottom right now. So I think he has earned some recognition as well. If I could go even more, you know, I've said his name a few times, but Mason Oak at Quinnipiac has been awesome in net, and I will not be surprised if he is on the actual list, even maybe as a teamer. Some voters might go that high on him. And that's some of the midseason guys. Again, by the time you listen to this, the list might be out, it might not be, but Inside Lacrosse, I think, is planning to publish it before this weekend's game, so keep an eye out for that.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I think this might end up being like our longest episode ever, man. Let's finally get to this weekend's games. Let's finally do it. Let's talk some matchups. Let's start with today, Friday, positive Friday. We have a game today, Loyola and Lehigh. Lehigh is +2.5 in this one on the road. They beat Bucknell by a goal last week, I think, and Loyola smacked Lafayette last week. It's the Patriot League. Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know what to do with these teams anymore in the Patriot League. Nobody does. I'm going to take the goals. When in doubt, I'm just going to take the goals. So give me Lehigh +2.5 against Loyola. And then on to the Saturday games. Some of these starting at 11 a.m. Oh, it's the best. Conference play in full swing. One of the best things about, as an aside, the March Madness basketball tournament, especially that first weekend, is that games start at like 11 in the morning. Oh, it's so great. But anyway, yeah, so lacrosse starting 11 o'clock in the morning with some of these games. I think this is one of them. St. John's and Marquette. Marquette is a 6-goal favorite in this game. They beat the Bonnies by 5 a week ago. St. John's beat Lemoyne. They've actually won 2 of their last 3, St. John's has. I think Marquette wins the game, but I'm going to take the goals here. I'm going to stick to my usual St. John's formula, and when the line is huge, just stick with the Johnnies. They've covered in 3 straight. So give me St. John's to cover +6 against Marquette. Next up, we got Bobby Moe and Mercer. Robert Morris got blown out by Cleveland State, I think, a week ago. They needed overtime to beat Detroit Mercy. I think it's been kind of a tough year for Robert Morris. Mercer played Jacksonville to a 1-goal game last week. I trust Mercer here for some good old A-fun lacrosse. Mercer's +1.5 at even money. I'm going to slam that. I'll probably take Mercer on the money line, man. I think Mercer +1.5 it's one of those things where, like, am I missing something? It seems so clear to me. But UNC and Army. So this is one of my 3 favorite games of the week. You can head over to sticksinlacrosse.com and read a little bit more about why I like it so much. But that one is maybe has a little bit of loser leaves town kind of feel to it. I don't know. But UNC Army is one of my favorites. Read about it at sticksinlacrosse.com. Bellarmine Lindenwood. Lindenwood is winless. They are an 11-goal dog to Bellarmine. Bellarmine's won 5 of their last 6. They're cooking an A-Sun play. It could easily be 6 in a row, but they choked a 9-2 lead against Utah and lost the game. The line here is huge, and that always scares me. I do not love these giant lines in lacrosse games, but I don't know. Against Lindenwood, I feel okay with this, so I'm going to take Bellarmine. I don't think Lindenwood's going to be doing a lot of scoring in this game. I'm going to take Bellarmine to win this game. You know, I feel like you could get like a 14-3, 14-2 kind of game. I don't know. I don't see Lindenwood putting the ball in that a bunch. Binghamton and UMass Lowell. Binghamton's a 7.5 goal favorite. They beat NJIT a week ago. UMass Lowell is winless. Binghamton beating NJIT breaks my heart, but it has not been a pretty year for Lowell. I'm going to stick with Binghamton here to cover. It's a big line. Again, these giant lines always scare me, but I just cannot trust UMass Lowell. So give me Binghamton minus 7.5. Bryant and NJIT. NJIT, the Highlanders are a 6-goal underdog. Where did the respect go? It's the biggest underdog line of the year for them. They've lost 2 straight. The shine is off a little bit, but look, I am riding the Highlanders until the wheels come off. Of course, give me NJIT plus 6 against Bryant. VMI and Canisius, the Keydets are a 2-goal favorite. They were on SportsCenter this week, I think. I think Luke Rostarucci had a great goal, but Canisius won midweek against Siena. That's a big win for them. It snaps a 5-game losing streak, I think. So I'm going to go with VMI here. I still think their offense can produce, so give me VMI as the 2-goal favorite. Navy and Colgate. More of these Patriot League games were like, who the hell knows? Navy is a 1.5-goal favorite at plus money. You know, Colgate has been good. This is sneaky, a really good game. This is one. This was going to be one of my 3 favorites, and it got pushed out by another game. But obviously huge here for Patriot League play. This kind of feels like the winner is the one that's for real kind of game. You know what I mean? Like, if you lose this game, you're not really a contender. But if you win this game, you're saying to everybody, all right, we're look out. Here we go. We're trending towards May here. Navy's got the Hopkins win. Colgate's got the Penn State win. I'm going to go with Navy here at the plus money, Navy minus 1.5. I'm going to trust Navy's defense to help them out here. Princeton and Dartmouth. Princeton's coming off the Harvard win. Dartmouth played Penn pretty close in the snow. This game is at Princeton. The spread is a massive 7.5. Princeton's the better team. And I think for Princeton, this is, you know, if you want to host the Ivy League tournament, you're kind of into must win these games for Princeton. You're probably going to need some help. They beat Harvard last week. They have the Cornell loss, though. So Cornell, I think, is in the driver's seat to host. So Princeton is going to need to win these games. I think Princeton wins. I think they play like they want to win and host the Ivy League tournament. But I'm going to get nuts here. I'm going to take Dartmouth to cover the 7.5. The big lines I'm a sucker for. I'm sorry. Speaking of big lines, Hampton is plus 19.5 against Delaware. That is a ton of goals, and that's how it's been all year, and Hampton still hasn't been great against the spread. So I'm going to take Delaware here, even with the 19.5. Scary to say it. It's sad to say it, but give me Delaware. Villanova and Denver. Denver lost to Duke last Sunday, had a low-scoring battle with Ohio State before that. Nova's won 3 in a row. They covered in 2 of them, some of them convincing, some not so much. The schedule, but Nova has a way of getting up for games like this. Villanova always comes, you know, has those games where they remind everybody, like, we're still here. We're hanging around. Denver's offense has not been racking it up lately, which is a little surprising given some of the weapons that they have and everything. J.J. Silstrop has cooled off a little bit in recent weeks, but I'm going to take Villanova here. I'm going to take Nova getting 3.5 at home. So give me Villanova plus 3.5. Detroit, Mercy, and Queens. Queens is plus 2 here. Detroit, Mercy is winless. Queens has failed to cover once this season. Give me Queens. Take me to Queens at once. Providence and Georgetown. The Hoyas are minus 8 on the road in this one. They beat Richmond a week ago. They've won 6 in a row. They're quietly lurking there as a team that is not getting enough talk as a deep run kind of team. I'm going to take the Hoyas to cover here. I think they are starting to put the beating on people. Harvard and UVA, one of my other favorites of the week. You can read about this game at sticksandlacrosse.com. I'll remind you that last year this game was 25-21 final, and UVA had 20 first-half goals. That's one of the reasons why it's one of my favorites. But again, read more about this one at sticksandlacrosse.com. St. Joe's and High Point. High Point is plus 1.5 here coming off that win against Carolina. St. Joe's has won 5 straight. They needed OT last week to make it 5 straight against Providence. So not instilling a ton of confidence there, but as the guy who is perpetually way too high on St. Joe's, I am staying on brand. Give me the Hawks minus 1.5 at plus money. Hobart and UMass. Hobart lost to Q's last week. They are now 3-5. UMass has lost three straight, each by a goal. So it's not like they're totally falling apart, but three in a row is three in a row. The last one was to Brown. So not, again, instilling a ton of confidence there either. I think they have a run in them for the A-10. I just, you know, it's Coach Cannella, he's going to get them to their gritty, blue-collar, just fight people kind of roots. They're on the road here. I will probably regret this, but I am going to take UMass here. I think UMass is -2.5. I think I saw Lima. So give me UMass. Jacksonville and Utah. Jacksonville is a 1.5 goal underdog at home to Utah. The Utes beat Detroit Mercy last week. The Dolphins smacked Cleveland State around this week. Jacksonville's won 5 in a row. I think the Dolphins are primed for the A-Sun run. I think these games were great last year, but Jacksonville and the shape that they're in, the form that they're in, getting goals at home, give me Jacksonville. I will take Jacksonville to win this game outright even. Hopkins, Michigan, huge Big Ten game here. Michigan coming off that, obviously, a win they really needed against Maryland. Hopkins beat Rutgers last week. Michigan's +2.5. They are on the road. They're at Homewood. Michigan was impressive last week. And this is kind of how they did it last year. They ramped up at this time of year into conference play and kind of took their game to a new level. And it felt a little bit like that last week too. I know Maryland hasn't necessarily been great, but I think Michigan played a game that they needed, as a locker room, as a team. They needed that kind of game. So I think this is them kind of ramping it up. Having said all that and gassed up Michigan, give me Hopkins. I like Hopkins here at home. I do. So give me the Jays -2.5. Wagner and Siena. Wagner's +5 in this one. They lost to LIU midweek. They're 1-9, but they have been good against the spread. I'm going to say they're over 500 against the spread. Siena lost to Canisius midweek. They lost to LIU a week ago. I like Siena here to win. I'm going to take the goals. Let's get nuts. I'm going to take Wagner +5. To stay within 5 goals of Siena. Towson-Stony Brook. Towson beat Fairfield last week in a monsoon. They've won 3 of their last 4. The loss in there is UVA. Stony Brook has lost 3 in a row. Last week they lost to Monmouth. That's not a good sign. The Seawolves are +4 here. The CAA can get wild. There's lots of good teams. There's lots of good talented players in there. But I think Towson's the player. Towson's recent form is much better than Stony Brook's. Stony Brook has, got a big down arrow next to him right now, I think. So give me the Tigers. Give me Towson -4. UMBC and Albany. Albany is -1.5. UMBC +1.5 here at even money. And they're at home. So they've won 2 in a row. The Retrievers have. One of those is over Bryant. That's pretty solid. Albany has won, just like Towson. They've won 3 of 4, and the loss is UVA. The Danes are just charging. I think they're doing the peak at the right time kind of routine. It's not just a team with Jake Pacino. I think Richmond's great. I think Hogg is great. They have some really, really good players. So I am going to take Albany here to be finding their rhythm and trending upwards. Holy Cross and BU. BU lost to Duke by a goal midweek, and they beat Army before that. This BU had to deal with a weather delay, and they were tied with Duke with 4 minutes left in the game. The game had to start 3 hours earlier. It had a weather delay in the middle, and it was played in a monsoon, and BU was still, they were tied with Duke with under 4 minutes left in that game. I think BU's recent form has been excellent. They're -9.5 here, though. That's a lot of goals. But look, I think BU's getting ready to make a run through this conference. Patriot League is insane, but I'm going to take the Terriers to win this game by 10 goals. Penn and Cornell. Cornell is a 2-goal favorite on the road here. Penn beat Dartmouth, as we said, in the snow last week. Cornell beat Princeton. Penn's got the Duke win. Otherwise, not a ton there. The fun here is that Penn has gone under in every game. Cornell has gone over in every game. Something's got to give here, unless they push and score exactly 26 goals, which would be hilarious. But I'm going to bet on the offense in the shootout kind of game here. I'm going to bet on Cornell to solve Emmett Carroll and kind of wear down this Penn team over time. I think faceoffs will be a difference in this game too, if Cornell can maybe play some make it take it. So Give me the big red and the offense here. Cornell, I will take -2 against Penn. Drexel and Fairfield. I don't know what the line is here because Connecticut, but Fairfield played Towson close a week ago. I think the weather contributed a little bit there, but Drexel had a midweek win over Hampton. They lost 4 straight before that, though. I kind of like Fairfield here. I think Fairfield can push for a tournament spot in the CAA. I'll have to see what the line is, but you know, just taking a straight-up winner, I kind of like the Stags here. So give me Fairfield. Hofstra and Monmouth. Hofstra's lost 5 in a row. They're a 2.5 goal favorite at home. Monmouth has been in good form lately. You know, I look at the results that Hofstra's had and the ones that Monmouth has had over the last month. I'm going to take Monmouth +2.5 here. Give me Monmouth. Marist and Manhattan. Marist lost to Sacred Heart. They've lost 4 of their last 5. Manhattan beat Quinnipiac this week to give the Q their first loss. So everybody hates Manhattan, I guess. I will take the Jaspers, though. Jasper's finding the rhythm a little bit. It's in the dark. I don't know what the line is quite yet, but give me the Manhattan here. Bonnies and Richmond. If Richmond is as good as we all say they are, they shouldn't lose the rest of the way. They're better than the rest of the A-10. They're an 11.5 goal favorite here. The Bonnies have 1 win. Their offense has very much struggled. I think the Spiders' defense is very good. That adds up to me taking Richmond here minus the 11.5. Brown and Yale. I cannot see the line, but I think somebody, I was talking to somebody and they mentioned to me that Yale, I think, is like a 6-goal favorite, somewhere in that neighborhood. I'm going to take Yale on the road here. They're cooking. I think they're going to win every faceoff in this game. And when they do that, they just kind of grind teams down. So I think Matt Brando might be setting some records this week. He is, I believe, a goal away from tying the career goal mark at Yale. So this is one where, if he doesn't score a goal in the game, it would be pretty surprising. So give me Yale here. I will take Yale the romp. Bucknell and Lafayette. Lafayette got blown out by Loyola last week. Bucknell played Lehigh to a 1-goal loss. I have enjoyed taking the Bison as an underdog this year. They've done pretty well in that spot. I'm going to keep doing it. So give me Bucknell +2.5. LIU and Sacred Heart. I cannot see the line yet because Connecticut, but Sacred Heart has been very good of late. 3 straight wins. 5 of the last 6, they have covered in each of those 3 straight wins. They go over in each of those 2. They've been just reliably good at winning these games and playing good offense. So I would need a line to be pretty big for me to take LIU here. I'm going to take Sacred Heart in the dark. Sacred Heart. Notre Dame and Cuse, obviously one of my favorites of the week, a top 3 matchup. Cuse can say it ain't just, a big 3 in the ACC here, that they belong in there with those other guys. So read more about this one at sticksinlacrosse.com and kind of the way I see this one shaking out. UVM and Merrimack. Merrimack lost to UMBC last week. They have won 1 game in their last 7. Vermont's a 3.5 goal favorite here. I'm all over that. Give me UVM to crush the faceoff spot and to roll Merrimack. Go Cats. Quinnipiac and the Mount. Bobcats suffered their first loss of the season this week when they fell to Manhattan. I will still take the Q. I can't see the line because Connecticut, but give me the Bobcats. Rutgers and OSU. Rutgers and Ohio State. I'm going to make the trip to Piscataway for this one. I'm excited for it. I haven't been to Rutgers since like a Final Four there in like 2001. So it's been a minute since I've been to see lacrosse at Rutgers. Rutgers is -1.5 plus money. It's basically a pick 'em. I'm going to take Ohio State here. I think Ohio State can cause some chaos in the Big Ten. I think if you have a good goalie and a good defense, you can frustrate teams who might have, you know, might be favorites against you. So I'm going to take the Buckeyes. And then Sunday, 2 games to close the weekend out. Air Force and Cleveland State. Air Force is a 6-goal favorite. They've won 3 straight. They beat Utah in there. That was impressive. The Vikings lost midweek to Jacksonville. That broke a 4-game win streak for them. It's a fun play, man. I'm going to take the goals. I'm going to take the goals and crazy things to happen. So give me the Vikings. Give me Cleveland State. And the final game of the weekend, Penn State and Maryland. This is the good. The Sunday, 7 p.m., Big Ten Network. Please let it be Joe B. and Mark Dixon on the call. It's one of my favorite things about the springtime is when you get to these conference play, the Big Ten Sunday night game is, oh, I love it. I love it. It alleviates the Sunday scaries. You just enjoy a great call on what's always going to be a well fought and highly competitive game. I love the Sunday night Big Ten Network game. So I'm pumped for this one. To the game itself, Penn State's -2. I have not loved Maryland's recent form. I have not made that a secret. I'm going to take Penn State at home -2 in this one, but I'm going to be ready for that Sunday night madness. I think if you wanted to say, look, in the Big Ten Network game on primetime, you just take the goals. I think that's a reasonable way to do it. But I like the way Penn State has looked lately. They are trending up, as I think Maryland is kind of in a bit of a rut right now. So I'm going to take the Nittany Lions -2 at home. And that is the slate. And that is going to be the episode for today. Again, I'm excited to say Sticks In is on the Believe in the Believe podcast world now. I'm very, very happy about that. I was very, very thrilled to have this opportunity. And again, I'm thankful to everybody who listens, who shares, who enjoys the podcast, because this is only happening because people actually listen to me talk for some reason. So I thank you for listening, and I thank you for being here and for sticking around with me. We will see you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.